gentlemen, welcome to Drive to HR, the number one daily radio show for the HR professionals. Your host, Brian, William, and Nisha, coming to you live every day, talking about human resources with our wonderful guest. And this week was pretty much busy and had a great Shrimp Annual Conference, Shrimp Annual Conference, met a lot of folks and made new friends and hugged and had that real time with a lot of wonderful HR professionals. And then we are back home, and Brian is traveling, and William is also traveling. So it's me doing the solo with our wonderful guest, Bonnie Tischmeyer. Hey, Bonnie, how are you doing?
I'm doing great. Glad
to
be here.
Oh, that's great. Thank you so much. Well, do me a favor, introduce yourself to our audience, and then we can talk about what's keeping you up at night.
Sure. My name is Bonnie Tischmeyer. I live and work in the Greater Toronto Area and have been in the human resources profession for 23 years.
Cool. That's great. So what's keeping you up at night these days, or what's keeping your clients up at night? You can talk about either of those, or probably both.
Well, what's keeping me up at night these days are transactions. It seems that as we move out of the recession, there's a lot of movement in terms of ownership of businesses, businesses being up for sale, businesses being purchased. And I get involved in a lot of those. So my mind is filled with all the details and the role that HR plays in a transaction.
Cool. That's great. That's an interesting subject. And let's talk about that in detail. What have you seen these days when doing this business transaction is happening? What is the role of HR when we talk about, you know, mergers and acquisition that's happening in the HR industry, in order to have a smooth transition from one world to another world?
So HR can, let's start with the question about what role HR can play. I think it actually plays a very critical and important role because oftentimes the value of the business is its people. And if you're someone in HR who works for a company that likes to purchase businesses, you've got to understand what is being purchased, what's the condition of the business. And that's not always the easiest thing to find out. And, you know, part of the reason is that deals are often not public while they're in process. So there's very limited access to people or information in the initial stages. And sometimes that work is done by outside people. It may be done by lawyers or accountants or other people on the due diligence team. My view is that really good due diligence teams have someone who is an HR practitioner who can get in there and peel back the layers and truly understand what is the heartbeat of the business and what some of the real risks are when you're looking at various aspects of it. So on that side, I think, you know, HR has an important role to play to ferret through all those details and give the purchasers an understanding of what they're buying and help them make the decision as to whether or not the purchase is right for them. There are plenty of people as well who, in an HR capacity, prepare businesses to sell. And that may just be getting the house in order and ensuring that the kinds of things that bring value to a purchase price are there. But it may also be to help, if it's public that they're for sale, to help people realize and recognize what a potential sale will mean for their employees.
Cool, that's great. So when we talk about employees, and as you said, you know, access to people information in the initial stage, there will be a lot of ambiguity in that initial stage talking about, when we especially talk about people. And probably some of them might have got laid off, or some of them might have moved to a new company. Some of them might be with that existing company. So there are a lot of ambiguities. So what is the role of an HR in terms of, you know, not to create any ambiguity, but to have that smooth transaction? Probably have a little bit transparency, give a little bit transparency to the employees to know what can be expected out of this particular life cycle in their company.
Yeah, and I agree with you that there typically is, especially when it's known that the business is for sale, there's a lot of anxiety. And I think HR has a really important role to play in shaping communication and shaping what will happen in the short term versus the midterm. Because oftentimes when a company is for sale, a lot of things just stop. They're, you know, projects are put on hold. Things don't move forward because it's just a situation in which the business isn't ready to reveal some of that or to make those sorts of investments. They're not sure if the purchaser is interested in those sorts of things. So just really helping to shape communication is often a very important part of HR's role.
Cool. So what is the role of a leader or a management in particularly in terms of communication and then building that kind of confidence level among the people that trust in their organization?
Well, and the leaders in this case may be either on the seller side or on the purchaser side, but, you know, in the first stage, let's assume that the transaction has happened. There's an awful lot of prep communication and a significant role that leaders play that help to build retention. You know, depending upon what the new ownership structure looks like, can have great and reputation, can have great bearing on whether great people in the business want to stay in the business. So retention is really important. And I think that leaders play probably the most important role in that retention phase to ensure that people understand where things are going to be going in the short term and in the midterm. You can't always give a long-term picture in the in a transaction because it's all new and you don't really know completely what you've gotten into. But I agree with you that leaders and managers have important roles to play. And typically, you know, a good rollout strategy has well-prepped existing leaders and managers who are able to answer the questions that people have, and those questions have been anticipated so that they don't get caught off guard with the kinds of concerns that employees might have.
Cool, that's great. And what would be the best retention strategy in that early stage of a merger or an acquisition? Because we know that this is going to happen. We are having the conversation with the business leaders. So this is actually an intentional move. So in order to have, in order to position yourself in a better place, what companies can do in terms of having a better retention strategy in that early stages so that they can move in a, riskless or without any risk. They can move without any risk of losing their better talent.
Well, I think, that's part of the assessment when you're doing the transaction is to what the pain points are in the organization. Are the pain points that there hasn't been any money for years and there have been no increases and no one has had any opportunity to move up or enrich in the organization? If you bring with you those opportunities to introduce those things that haven't been in the business for a while, that's part of how you would retain. If part of it is that the organization is overstaffed for the kinds of revenue levels or sales levels that are in the business. And there's going to be cutbacks to be really clear about when those things are going to happen, why they're going to happen, and to have restoration plans in place so that people have confidence that once those kinds of changes have occurred, that there is going to be some level of normalcy in the future. Also, you know, in businesses, the company purchasing may not have the same types of benefits that the original organization had. And while in most jurisdictions there's successor employer obligations and responsibilities to keep people whole, how they go about doing that may be different in one organization versus another. And it's really important to have contemplated that and to ensure that when you're making the transition that the people feel as if they ended up with a deal that was the same or better than where they started. So whether that be a pension plan or some form of benefits plan or just vacation, you want to ensure that people feel like they got recognized for what service they've already put into the business.
Cool, that's an interesting insight. But having that thought in my mind, I have one more question, because so many companies, they might not stress on money, or probably even if they stress on money, employees from their perspective, for them, a career advancement or a promotion or a better role or learning a new skill might be much more important than earning some money or incentive. So what's your take on, you know, building that career growth within the organization or replacing the people within the organization itself by giving a better chance, by giving a better role, probably learning a new skill or learning a new role. So what's your thoughts on that?
Well, I'll step back one step from mm-hmm. that question and just comment that in the projects that I've worked on related to this, one of the primary things that I see in business, unfortunately, is mm-hmm. HR departments that are sorely understaffed or staffed with unqualified individuals. And when that is the case, all these really important niceties, and I'm not even sure it's fair to say the word niceties, but all the essential things that go into organizational development are often very much missing in the business. So along with a strategy that may talk about house cleaning and getting it into a situation where people who may have been underutilized are better utilized in a new structure comes mm-hmm. with a commitment to invest in that. In my experience, people are really interested in that, and that is part of the retention strategy, is just ensuring that you have or you bring with you enough robust resources to ensure that those kinds of things happen.
Cool, that's great. Well, I'm going to do a quick quiz at everybody. We are talking with our wonderful guest, Bonnie Tischmeyer, and we are talking about mergers and acquisition and the business transaction and the role of HR. So let's segue into engagement part of it, or the employee engagement during an organizational mergers or acquisition time. So what's your take on what's the role of an HR professional or the entire HR department in terms of driving that engagement level among the employees?
Well, oftentimes HR has a role to play, but they aren't the leader of that type of initiative. And it's more important that HR ensures that the people who lead that are capable and qualified and excited about taking on a project of engagement. We know that people stay because of their relationship with their manager or with their supervisor. So competence at and confidence at those levels is a substantial part of ensuring that people feel engaged because they're being delegated work that is appropriate to the circumstances, that they're getting training and that they see a direction and that they can align themselves and their activities with that kind of direction. But as I said, from an HR perspective, you know, an HR-centric model for most businesses doesn't work very well. We need to be the leaders of the facilitation, but not leaders of the action items or the outcomes themselves.
Mm-hmm. Well, I remember working with my previous organization, and I was part of a project like this when a group of employees, they were being acquired by different partners of us, and that was part of an outsourcing process. But still, till that moment, you know, we have been living as a family, and everybody was working together. And suddenly, a lot of changes were happening. And as I said in the beginning, that ambiguity was there, that fear was there, and this thought were there in our mind. How do we create that engagement level? How do we direct their focus on any particular assignment so that they will be engaged, so that they will be aligned with that particular activities and not focusing on the, you know, fear or what's happening behind or what's happening to their team members or to their colleagues in the organization. So this fear of risk among these employees, would that make a big issue for the rest of the employees in the organization?
Well, and that's why in many cases, the best strategy for the new implementation is if there's going to be change, that as much of that change happens together and within a close period of time after the closure of the transaction, because you want to get through a settlement period and you want people to feel good about the connections that they're making to the leadership within the purchasing organization, for example. And in some cases, you know, it's mixed. But you have to think about, is the leadership in the selling organization staying? Like, is it just an investor that's coming in and letting the operation continue to run as the leadership of the existing organization sees fit? Or is there going to be a wholesale change of leadership? And if there is, and there's going to be integration, the important part is, for those people who are going to be infected by the integration, you've got to get through basically an onboarding and a really good orientation of how things are different. And how well that goes, in my view, is largely based upon how well the purchasing HR people, how well they were able to dig in and develop a plan for how that orientation was going to work. Understanding as much of the culture and the divide in culture that may be there just as the transaction is finishing.
Cool, that's great. Well, talking about the culture, I know you're from Canada. So one of my personal questions from my end is, you know, I'm from India, and I'm here in UA. So every day I'm seeing this cultural aspect of it. So what are some cultural differences that you can pinpoint from Canada to UA's work world?
Well, there are many differences. And if I were to point to the one that always comes to mind when I'm asked this question, I'm tainted by the fact that the majority of the work that I do is in the Greater Toronto Area. And the Greater Toronto Area has the highest concentration of newcomers into the country of any part of the world. There are statistics that show that 50% of the population was born someplace else. And among a really large group of countries, you know, you said that you came from India and are living in Dallas. Well, if you came from India and moved to Toronto, you would be one of hundreds and hundreds of thousands of people who have come from India. So when it comes to HR practices, you have to turn your mind to a much broader workforce with a much broader set of needs and demands than I think you generally find in workplaces in most of the United States. The other big differences are just, you know, between the U.S. and Canada, you're dealing with Canada being a Commonwealth nation and more European-style employment laws that are, you know, just are in some respects opposite of the way you would think about things in the States. So I do find, perhaps it's because I'm also a U.S. citizen and have worked in the U.S., that when the purchaser is a U.S. company and they don't have much grounding in how things work or how the culture fits in Canada, that sometimes that's a big hurdle to overcome. And the Canadians, I would suggest, don't let them forget that easily. They really like the fact that they're a separate country with their own ways of thinking, and that the ways they're thinking are actually quite global.
Cool. Well, I'm sure you might be doing a lot of national and international mergers and acquisitions. So, you know, diversity plays a great role in this merger and acquisition, and especially from a global arena. So, what's your take on how to embrace this diversity and inclusion in an organization in order to enhance that close border alliance and to strengthen that close border alliance?
Well, there's really good environmental scans that you can do that help to understand what the thinking is and what's even sometimes it's the small differences, how hours of work are agreed to, and what kinds of circumstances people are dealing with. Those little things are, if you try to change them, are the things that make people upset and less, you know, you start to run into retention issues. So you really want to look at the things that people think about day to day, like how am I going to get to work? Is a small change, like we're going to move the facility to the other side of town, did you just add an hour commute onto people's lives? And what kinds of impact might those things have? If it went from being, you know, either a Canadian or U.S. operation and now head office is far, far away, what kinds of things are you going to do to ensure that people start to get to know one another in ways that are more than just transactional to the day-to-day work? We like to know the people that we're working with, and even if that is to know something simple like what the name of their dog is, to, you know, the kinds of things that are impacting them, you have to think broader to ensure that people can connect in a meaningful way.
Cool. That's really a meaningful insight in order to increase the connection between the employees or engagement level between each other. And I appreciate that. You know, that's a really great way to get to know one another. Who is sitting next to you? At least talk to them, and probably from HR or from employers level, it is a great way to enhance that relationship or strengthen that relationship among the employees. So what are your advice to build a cultural awareness training for managing these international mergers and acquisitions?
Well, certainly, if you're the person who is involved in the purchase and the target organization is in another country, it is worth it to get on the ground in that region and understand what the local issues are, understand how the workplace may work together in order to map out how you would work through those types of cultural issues and decide which ones are really important and which ones are less important, for example. And in the if you're in the selling organization, it's being sure that you get on the agenda what the culture is really like in the business, or where you think it where its opportunities are, so that that can line up better with the purchasing organization.
Cool. Well, we have a question from our Twitter feed from Daniel. She's asking, which skills are missing in the HR department? How do we develop or acquire them? As you mentioned, some skills gap in the HR function during these mergers and acquisitions. So what are your thoughts on that?
Well, probably one of the main, from an HR perspective, skill deficiencies is just not enough grounding in business and an understanding of the types of things that purchasers are interested in knowing and hearing about or risks associated with the business. So being able to look at things like workers' compensation costs and trends and overtime costs and trends and level of compliance, the level of compliance with other types of things, you know, the simple things like required programs in Canada, whether that be something like AODA or pay equity or, you know, internationally differences in risks under occupational health and safety or environmental types of concerns. I find generally that HR does not have enough of a legal mind or a legal strategy background to be able to inform the process. And so I see that as a significant learning opportunity for HR. And also just ensuring that the simple things like record keeping, that they're sufficient to meet transactional requirements.
Cool, that's great. Well, we have about 1 minute left, but I'd like to ask one more question that has been asked on Twitter by George Davis here. How do you influence the buyer of a merger and acquisition to allow the code being acquired to maintain their culture or identity?
Well, I laugh when I respond to this because purchasers have their own personality and often their objective is not to adopt the culture of what they're buying, but rather to assimilate what they're buying into their culture. But from the HR role, you would need to identify the assets of the culture and to push them in the direction of, you know, here are the really good parts about what you're buying and why you may even want to take the lessons learned and ensure that they know or can use them to improve their own larger organization.
Cool. Thank you so much, Donnie, for stopping by and sharing your insights with us. We have a great time talking to you.
Yes, my pleasure. And see you on the wires.
Yeah, sure. So there you go, guys. We'll talk to you all tomorrow. Goodbye.